From KCRW Santa Monica and KCRW.com, this is The Treatment.
Welcome to The Treatment. I'm Elvis Mitchell. I am thrilled to have for his third time around on the show. He's been here for each of his films, Hunger and Shame. Director Steve McQueen is back with his newest film, 12 Years a Slave, The Story of Solomon Northup. Steve, first of all, so good to see you. Thanks for doing the show again.
Thanks for inviting me.
For the 100th time probably today, if you would tell the audience what 12 Years a Slave is about.
12 Years a Slave is a story about a man called Solomon Northup, who was a free man, a free black man in the North, who in 1841 was kidnapped and dragged into slavery. And for 12 years, he remained in the South as a slave until 1853.
One of the things, though, that this movie touches on that you've done in your previous films is that the way people act around privilege. I mean, privilege, you know, in Hunger and Shame, the idea of these guys who sort of dealing with the fact that they come out of worlds of privilege and they kind of divorce themselves from it. And Solomon has, privilege is kind of a dear thing to him. The privilege he has of being free at the beginning of the movie, the beginning of his life, and to have that taken away from him and thrown in these situations where he lives to support privilege is really interesting to me.
I think we all, you know, the privilege we have today, of course, is very interesting in the way that it was in 1841 when Solomon was kidnapped. I mean, you know, we're in 2013. And, you know, who's paying for our freedom? Who's paying for our liberty as such? I mean, today, you know, our clothes we're wearing and stuff, someone's paying for our lifestyle. So, again, it's just a reflection in some ways. I always say, oh, I would like that my films have some kind of reflection on now. On the here and now, absolutely. It's not just about what happened yesterday. It's actually what's going on now.
No, they're all about repercussions, aren't they? I mean, the film's really all about consequence.
Yeah, absolutely. Yes. And seeing both sides of that coin. All the films, in fact, you're quite right. And just to sort of get a broader understanding of where and who we are and where we are in position in time right now. It just fascinates me, and not to sort of be in a situation where it's about revenge or about right and wrong in some ways. I mean, yes, there is a right and there's a wrong. I believe that. But there is a situation of just looking at how the mechanism works and why it works.
See, I wondered about this, too, because your previous films, Shame and Hunger, are kind of about the elisions between what we think right and wrong are. I mean, you could look at either those situations, either those protagonists. Some people think those guys are right. Mm-hmm. Some people think those guys are wrong. You leave it to the viewers to decide that. This is very much a situation where we know what's wrong.
Yes.
And I wondered if it just felt like it was time for you to make a movie where there was a real understanding that there is evil in the world as compared to it being kind of a book, a gray area.
Yeah, I suppose it was trying to understand it. I feel, you know, one could get mad and get upset, but also in order to sort of detect it and also to master it and also to tame it, one has to understand it, understand how it works. And that was my main focus, really, finding out how, you know, within the sort of capitalist situation of that time, through, you know, the agriculture, within logging and cotton fields.
Cotton production and tobacco production.
And cane and stuff. I mean, one has to, in order to understand America, where it is now, one has to understand slavery. I mean, this is not just me saying it. It's Iris Berlin, who was a professor, one of the top people on the topic of slavery. You know, to understand the whole mechanism of
the American economy.
Yes, exactly, and in some ways, the American dream. One has to sort of understand slavery.
But I think what I'm trying to ask you though here is that this is a movie. In Shame and Hunger, the idea of morality is in the eye of the beholder. I mean, you can decide what you think of those characters. In this movie, there's very much a morality at play here. There's a real moral division in this movie.
Sure.
And I felt like that was a really interesting thing for you. This movie is sort of defiantly about exercise morality, isn't it?
Well, absolutely, because also a lot of people think that they understand or know history or know slavery, in particular slavery. And I wanted to present it to them in a way which was questioning and bringing up new ideas within that topic, which maybe they didn't know. And I think people are very flippant about slavery.
How do you mean?
Well, I don't think people think about it very often at all. And the fact of the matter is, when you walk out the street, the evidence of it is all around us. And I wanted to sort of put it on to a platform where people viewed it. And then when I leave the cinema, see the repercussions. The story still goes on. You know, not just but the fact that Solomon leaves Patsy behind, leaves all the slaves behind. It's just how what went on after that through the centuries to where we are now.
See, I feel like it's, you set it up, you make it a cyclical story because at the beginning of the movie, after Solomon has been kidnapped into slavery, he's left behind himself. At the very beginning, and when he's being taken off the boat, he's left behind by someone he's got to know, and then he leaves somebody behind. I mean, there's this kind of awful cyclical nature to that, and I wondered, that feels like it was a conscious decision for you to make to sort of start his story with him being left behind and to end with him leaving somebody behind as well.
Well, there's a kind of selfishness. There's a kind of each man for themselves, which is sort of, I suppose, what I was trying to point at and where we are now. I mean, you know, it's a very selfish society. I mean, you know, each man for themselves. I mean, you know, it's not a society what we have now, which is sort of all inclusive. And I just, it's just to think about it, that's all. It's just to provoke. I mean, I'm guilty as much as anyone else.
How so?
Well, you know, again, I mean, you know, it's just one of those things that as being a human being, you can't help everyone. It's just impossible, unfortunately. I mean, that's the thing. But you try to, you know, through my work, I try to help everyone. That's the only thing I've got that I feel is can be generous in that way, because there is a something. I mean, the world is a very it's a rat race, isn't it? You know, you try to make a bit of money just to have an income to sort of be secure, and you know, you're happy when you've got that in a regular basis, and because you can survive. You know, that is it. And you know, everyone's trying to survive, and other people, some people survive better than others.
Sure.
You know, that's the capitalist society we're in, and it's kind of if only there was another way. I don't know if there is, you know. But the only thing you can do is through. I mean, that's why it's interesting within the arts. You can actually have this generosity, and I think that's why the arts is so important and has made a difference.
I think so. It's the treatment. I'm talking to Steve McQueen. His third film as director is 12 Years a Slave. You're getting at something here that I feel like is a part of everything you've done as a filmmaker, which is the idea, the fact that guilt hovers in all these films. Basically, the guilt of the sort of the priest and not being able to make an impact in the hunger, and the sort of the guilt that your character deals with in shame about not being able to basically integrate himself into the normal world. And there's guilt too. I mean, Solomon's guilt about leaving people behind. And
well, it's not for me. No, I wouldn't say guilt. It's not a Catholic sort of situation here. Far from it. No, it's not guilt. I think that's a complete waste of time.
I don't mean guilt in that religious sense. I mean, that sort of guilt of feeling you're not being able.
Well, it's not necessarily guilt. I wouldn't start in that way. What I would say is a situation of, it's more a case of generosity rather than anything else. It's a complete reverse.
Okay.
It's a case of how do we acknowledge a certain thing and how do we look at it and how does it play out as such? And, you know, that's it. That's all an artist can do is acknowledge something and look at it and view it. That's all you can do. You can obviously make a judgment of it, but in order to sort of have some kind of truth, as it were, you've got to show it as it is with all its faults and warts and ugliness and beauty. Yeah, that's it.
As you're saying this, though, I find myself thinking about the kind of generosity that it takes to be a director. I mean, as an artist, in the way you work in the video pieces, it's something that you control. It's mostly in your hands. And when you're directing a movie, you have to bring in everybody. You've got a cinematographer and a costumer and a location manager and sound people and actors. And I wonder if for you, if directing is a way for you to sort of offer up that kind of generosity you're talking about. I mean, because there's a kind of almost lonely, isolated quality to being an artist. And the idea of making a movie demands a more of a social interaction, but also forces you to be generous, does it not?
Well, I think I am generous in general.
But you know what I mean?
I understand. It's not exclusive to, for me, it was not exclusive just to, you know, but I understand what you mean. But it's for me, it's...
Isn't it ceding control a little bit? I mean, as a director?
No, not at all. You have more control, in fact, because what's happening in that way, and it's not just, but it's what's happening with it. All these experts are trying to make your film better.
Okay.
I mean, you're letting them in, but also you're giving them, for me, where I work with say, a production designer or a costume designer or hair and makeup or whoever, even catering, is to get a situation where everyone feels it's their movie. It's theirs. And it is theirs. So there's a generosity there, but I'm not doing it because other than the fact that it just makes a good movie and it helps to have a great social surroundings where even the actors are feeling safe in order to sort of, you know, to experiment and to push themselves into further, because when you have that environment where people are together, working together in that way, things happen. Fireworks and wonderful ideas happen. Control is not so interesting. Losing control is much more interesting.
Okay.
I think any musician will tell you that you make the environment lose control, but within the boundaries of what you've made. So it becomes something which is unpredictable. It's art, magic, whatever it is.
Because you have to create a safe environment for actors mm-hmm. such as Paul Dano and Paul Giamatti and Benedict Cumberbatch, these people, to play these awful human beings. You've got to create such an environment of safety. Mm. They've got to feel like they can do this and trust you with that, don't they?
Well, that's it. I mean, even the extras, everyone is involved in this. I mean, and Michael Fassbender as well.
And Sarah Paulson.
But it's wonderful when you've got actors who trust you, and the environment is there of that, where everyone can actually, you know, be the worst person they could possibly be in the situation of a slave master, like Michael Fassbender had to, or Sarah Paulson had to be, and to be free to do that, because that's what we're doing. We're making art. We're reflecting on this unfortunate recent past, and everyone is on board. We drank together, we had dinner together, there was a real camaraderie, because we knew we were trying to do something of some kind of worth. I mean, you know, some of the extras who were after Michael the scene, which was kind of rough, people were hugging each other, you know, because we got through that, we did that, and you know, it was wonderful. It was a we project. It was our work. It was wonderful. One of the best experiences I've ever had on set. Yeah, very humbling, actually.
I was wondering about that, if it was a kind of a trepidatious experience for you, because you're asking actors, evolved people, to play the worst sides of humanity.
It's great. Because we can. You know, I'm very humbled with actors who can, because not a lot of people can, of course.
Sure.
And it's the thing, who can portray humanity. And humanity has many, many sides. And I'm very grateful to those actors that they could go there, but also that the people who created the environment for them to do that. And we had to go there, because otherwise we are not doing our job. You know, that we have to sort of create. I mean, it's like, you know, Shakespeare, you know, or whatever. It's a Greek tragedy. I mean, you know, whatever. I mean, you have to portray things in their actuality, how they were, in order to sort of make drama. Otherwise, we don't have it. Everyone's good. And, you know, that's not true.
They're not, of course. But the difference between doing a classical piece versus doing this is we have the distancing balm of time. We can say when it was written, that was the way that was meant to be. But you'd create a piece to be done contemporarily, looking back on that. And that's a lot to ask of actors. And I wonder if that made you kind of concerned about going to them at all and getting on board.
No, you have to have balls. If you're an artist, you have to have balls. You got to do it. You have to go where most people wouldn't go. You know, that's why we're trying to do something which is sort of importance or has some value, because most people wouldn't go there, and we went there. We had to go there. We went down into this surreal world, which was 160 years ago, within slavery. And we were artists within that world. I had to be, otherwise, you have to portray that certain kind of reality. I think the bravery of the actors, but also the courage of us. But it wasn't courage. It was real love. It was weird. I wouldn't say weird isn't the right word. There was a real, I mean, the way I
work. But that's a weird word to use. I know what you're saying, isn't it?
The way I work, it's just, it was full of love everywhere. Everyone was just full of love, because we were doing something which we found to be necessary. When does that ever happen? Not often, unfortunately.
Let's take a break. We'll come back and talk more with Steve McQueen, whose new film as a director is 12 Years a Slave. I'm Elvis Mitchell. It's The Treatment. There's more to come.
You're listening to The Treatment with Elvis Mitchell from the studios of KCRW Santa Monica.
Listen to KCRW's 24-hour all-news channel. Stream BBC World Service, NPR, and KCRW programs. Continuous coverage and accessible via our smartphone app or online at kcrw.com.
Welcome back. It's The Treatment, the only place you can hear the black Elvis talking to the black Steve McQueen. We're talking about his newest film as director, 12 Years a Slave. And I'm a bullet. But I feel like that's the fascinating thing about this movie, that it's, and you talked about well, you work demanding balls, but every time you made a movie, you've kind of gone into an area that for the audience creates discomfort.
Well, it's interesting you say that because I'm interested in things which are, you know, hunger for me. You know, again, that was something that was swept underneath the carpet for 27 years. I mean, it was 10 men who died in a British prison cell through starvation. I mean, last 27 years, up until we made the movie, what has been of that significance in British politics? Nothing. And it had been swept beneath the carpet. And for me, it was obvious with shame, sexual addiction. You know, it's deafening. I mean, you know, this particular kind of affliction, you know, it's kind of very now. I mean, you know, over 80% of internet traffic is pornography. You know, so it's very loud. It's the elephant in the room.
But you're driven to find a way to dramatize these things that people don't talk about.
Because they're so loud. They're deafening. I mean, slavery. I mean, you know, it's deafening. But somehow it's invisible. All three, I mean, it's deafening. Anyone who's, you know, listening to it, just walk out the door and walk for a couple of minutes and you'll see the evidence. If not immediately, you'll see the evidence of slavery. You know, these things are just, you know, they're screaming. It's almost like a dog whistle going off. And as an artist, as a filmmaker, you want to make films which are, at least for myself, I want to make films which are relevant to now, but also just in order to ask questions, that's all. I mean, you know, I think I'm doing my job.
That's interesting now because, you know, you're a dad, you're a family man.
Yeah.
And are you able to talk to your daughter's old enough to have a conversation about this. You had a conversation with your daughter about this yet?
Oh, well, 12 is a slave. We spoke. She's 15. She was a bit speechless. She wasn't, you know, it was a bit, she couldn't talk really about it. She was with her friends as well. So, but afterwards, we just had a conversation about, you know, slavery and, you know, her own ancestors and stuff like that. And it was just really, you know, we speak about it all the time anyway. But it was interesting for her to just talk about the idea of the structure of the film and how it worked and, you know, what the dramatization actually. So it was interesting.
It's got to be too, because I wonder the idea of her father being a filmmaker and making something like this. Mm-hmm. And if a kid who's media savvy, who basically falls asleep with movies playing around her and wakes up, movies are part of her life all the time, to have something like this come from her dad must have been made for a really unusual conversation for you guys.
No, not at all.
No?
No, just she
takes the subject matter. She was, that's what I mean.
She knew the subject matter. I think,
but it's, you know, one thing to know it in the abstract and something else to see it.
Well, I think it was, yes, it was tough, but at the same time, it was one of those things that we spoke about. I think kids are much more receptive and understand things in a way more than I think I ever did, because they communicate better or quicker.
You think so?
I do. We live in the Netherlands, so I don't know about America. But yeah, they're pretty sharp cookies.
Well, that's part of the difference too, isn't it? If you're an American and you don't live in the South, because if you live in Europe, most parts of Europe, basically wars were fought there, and that mm-hmm. history is inescapable, and it's discussed, and it's around. And you can't get around it. If you're in Poland, if you're in Warsaw, half the city is gone because it's been bombed out.
Yes.
But in America, if you live someplace outside of the South, first of all, you're living in a country where basically there hasn't been a war since the Civil War. Mm. And so the idea of history reminding you of what people have gone through doesn't exist.
Yeah. Living in Amsterdam, for me, is like, it's like living with ghosts. There's two things going on at the same time. I always find there's two narratives going on at the same time because it's still a 17th century city. And it wasn't bombed by Nazis. They threatened. They bombed Rotterdam. They said, if you don't surrender, we will bomb Amsterdam. So, of course, they surrendered. So it's one of those things, which is interesting, yeah. Just the two narratives going on all the time. You can't pass a street where you sometimes, you know, again, quite often you pass somewhere in the street in Amsterdam and there's a monument to people. I mean, so sort of when a Nazi officer was shot or killed or, you know, by the resistance or whatever, they would round up the first 10 people, they fall the street and shoot them.
It's so interesting you say that. By the way, it's a treat. I'm talking to Steve McQueen. His new film as director is 12 Years a Slave, the story of Solomon Northup. As people of color, we live lives with two narratives anyway. I mean, you know, we're basically observers of the world of the mainstream, but also when we intersect with people, we understand that they have a different kind of reaction to us, and our history mm-hmm. comes into play in ways that, as you say, often aren't talked about. And I just wonder if part of the reason for you turning to 12 Years a Slave, you wanted people to talk about that narrative, that unspoken narrative of people of color around the world who were enslaved, if that was part of your incentive in some conscious way.
Well, for example, Miss Shaw, who I love, the character, that character's never appeared in a cinema before. This has never appeared on even TV before, and there's much more narratives to tell about slavery. It's such a rich subject matter. It's like the Civil War. It's like the Second World War. I heard that they're going to sort of remake the
Roots.
Yeah, which I don't necessarily, I'm happy that they want to do that, but I just feel there's much more. We heard that story already. We don't have to rehash it. There's not been a film about the Underground Railroad. It's amazing, the story, and it's just amazing. So in some ways also, I don't want, 12 Years a Slave as a movie, I want it to be matched up against any and every film, not just so-called slavery movies.
Yes, exactly.
It's a movie.
That now somehow we're talking about slavery movies as if that's somehow a subgenre. There are less than 20 movies about slavery. So it's somehow to say that it exists as this venue to tell stories is laughable to me. When I hear people say, well, compare your movie to other slavery movies, there haven't been that many.
Exactly. But movies in general, there have been a lot. So therefore, that should be the criteria. But there's always a sort of ghettoization of things, but it's all about the quality as far as I'm concerned and looking at, so that's it.
What's interesting, I guess, too, for me, because I said this to you after I saw the movie, I feel that there's an enormous leap in terms of your handling of actors. First of all, it's the biggest cast you ever had. Mm-hmm. And I wonder if that was daunting for you, because you certainly rose to the challenge. There's great acting everywhere, and there's always lots of people in the scene. I should say always, because often Solomon is alone and left with his thoughts and not speaking. But there are so many scenes with lots of people, and I just wondered if this movie came too because you were ready to tackle a movie with a large cast, if it just felt like that was...
No, it's a subject matter. Again, I think also sometimes you don't know how much you can actually do as a person. I think more like humans, we often more than likely talk ourselves out of a situation than talk ourselves into a situation.
Is that what you do?
I talk myself in.
Talk yourself out?
I think in general, because I'm not saying that I do, but I think in general, one is afraid to do things. And I think one has to do what one has to do. This is what I do, is I just jump.
I just jump. Just not knowing you as well, but to the extent I know you, there's a part of you that seems surprised, the idea of just jumping into something to test yourself.
It's not about me as a, it's not, yes, to some extent, yes, but the most important thing is the story. If the story is necessary, then I'll do everything I can to make it happen. It's all about the story, and if the story is big enough or interesting enough for me, therefore I will do everything I can to try and make it happen. Hopefully I can. Do you know what I mean? It's the importance of the material.
It's so fascinating because just talking to you about this basically since I saw the movie in March, it's a story that's been unfolding for you in the way that no movie ever has before, isn't it? In terms of reaction, just because it's a movie that asks a lot of audiences, and it's got to be comforting to you to see the extent to which audiences embrace the movie when they see it.
Yeah, it has been pretty amazing that, and how the critics have responded as well, because these kind of things need support, need help. And when the critics start helping, or not even helping, they respond the way they did, independently of they're not going to do anyone a favor, are they? The way they've sort of come out in support of the movie, that obviously helps people to go to the movie, and it just has this effect. And again, the word love comes out, and it is about healing. This movie for me has always been about wanting to make it. It was all about confronting my own, not just me, issues with slavery. Some journalists asked me this question: when was your first encounter with slavery? When you first encountered slavery, I couldn't remember. It was like someone asking me, when was the first time you knew your name? It's always been there. So as a young person, as a black person, you, at a very early age, advanced to most people, you are always sort of putting yourself in a situation where you're thinking about your place in society now, at a very young age, because you're forced to, because of the circumstances of your existence. So at a very young age, it's very interesting because, you could go left or right with it. you know, it could be a positive thing or it could be a negative thing in a way, because where your possibilities are, where you are born, you know, where you grow up. So there's so many elements that come into play. And me, myself, growing up in England, having a free education, going to university, having that possibility as being a right and not an impossibility, this allowed me to make this film. That's just a fact.
I've got to say, though, because it's just what's so great for me about the movie is that you made movies, your first two films, about these guys who have this impulse, this almost compulsive need to communicate in some way or another. And you made a movie here about a guy who is innately well-spoken and lives his life until he's abducted like an artist and has to become someone else. And in fact, I found myself wondering if it was his art that got him through, because he has to become an actor. He has to divorce himself from who he really is, but at least he keeps that thing secreted, keeps that hidden away to himself until he's forced to shatter his violin. And it's a remarkable thing to create for an actor. And I just feel like for you and Chiwetel Ejiofor in this is such a great combination. And for a while I thought of Michael Fassbender as being your kind of the guy to act out these compulsions for you, but you found another person to do that. That must have been really exciting for you to find another actor to take on that mantle in that way.
Yeah, and an actress. I mean, again, I worked with Kerry Mulligan, but also Lupita Nyong'o,
right?
Who we discovered, we didn't discover her. She always existed, but
she hadn't done a big movie until this.
No, it's the first time she'd ended. She was at school, so it's just great to sort of give them a break. And I think with Chiwetel and Lupita and Michael, they're just sort of rare breed. You know, they're actors and they're artists, and that's the difference. And just working with them in order to sort of, they need surroundings, they need support, they need the possibilities that they can actually do stuff and actually fail and I said before, fail better and actually experiment and try things and be honest and open and naked and be supported in that. You know, it's great. When you got like the camaraderie, it's amazing. And for me, I think the job of a director is to harness that. That's what the job of director is, to sort of bring all those people together. Again, it's the catering, it is the makeup, it is hair, it is costume, it is production designers, it is sound and camera department. It is all these elements which make the machine to sort of be on at the highest level. And there was a buzz around set. This is the buzz of focus, of concentration, because everyone was at the highest level. It had to be. I demanded it. I had to have it. I demanded it. And because of this subject matter, people wanted to give it. So there you have it.
And we're out of time. Again, Steve, thanks so much for doing this.
Oh, my pleasure. My absolute pleasure. Thank you for asking.
Of course. My guest is Steve McQueen. The movie you should see and know, his new film as director, is 12 Years a Slave. Our recording engineer who also mixes the show is Melissa Morton. It's edited and produced by Jenny Radelette. I'm Elvis Mitchell. I'm not on social media because the Commodore 64 doesn't support it. But if you are, like the show on Facebook or leave a comment on iTunes. It's The Treatment.
Find past episodes of The Treatment at kcrw.com or subscribe to the podcast on iTunes. Listen to The Treatment on demand on your smartphone with KCRW's apps. The Treatment is produced and distributed by KCRW Santa Monica.